You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I'm a big star, you know.
Listen live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.
Good morning, DCR.
Got the number one pick and a Super Bowl champ with the man that can't seem to stump. Do something dumb, that's an observation. CLT make him need to run.
That's Lawrence Taylor!
I don't marry trash, DMT for short. Wonder if we best, why don't you peep the score? Sports Center Reed, gonna be top stories of the morning. While you're yawning, grab your coffee, rise and shine with 98.7. This is Drive Time. We provide highlights from your favorite teams. Dave, Chris, and Rick making plenty of picks. It's Rule 76.
And off and running on a Monday, August 2nd. This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. And unless you're super sleepy right now, you probably realize that I am none of those three people. No, I'm Gordon Damer. In this week, well, at least these next couple of days. Because why? Well, because some of the guys bailed on you. DiPietro bailed on you as the audience. Rothenberg, more vacation time for him. The R&R boys, Rothenberg and Rick, rest and relaxation, boy. They have a lot of vacation lined up, apparently, but big show lined up today. Lots on the plate. And don't worry, because the big guys here, the class of the show is still showing up. And that, of course, is one Chris Canty. Chris.
You know what it is, G? I think because Bob was choosing referred to me as the class of the show last week, the guys decided, you know what, We're going to stay away for a little while. That's what we're going to do. We're going to let the class of the show have it, and we're not going to touch the show, and we're going to beg for us to come back. That's what it is. That's what they're trying to do right now to me. That's what it is, because they're offended that Bob was choosing referred to me in that manner. That's what's happening right now. They think I don't know, but I actually know what's going on.
Well, the good news for you is that you're still the class of the show, and today, without Bob here, you will be able to get a couple of words in edgewise.
Just a few.
I'm sure that they planned their vacation ahead of time, but did you have a good weekend at least?
No, I had a great weekend. I'm actually down in the Carolinas. I was celebrating a big birthday for my older brother, who for some strange reason doesn't want me to bring up the fact that he is 50 years old, and I don't understand why that's a problem. Like, I don't understand why people have this hang up with age, Gordon. I mean, it's not, if we don't say it, it's not like it changes how old you are. I mean, if you're 50 years old, you're 50 years old. But he doesn't like the fact that I actually say it. I guess it makes him feel like he's over the hill. I don't know what it is, but he hates the fact anytime I bring up that he's actually 50 years old, it bothers him.
Yeah, well, look, as someone who is also now 50, it's tough because there's no way that you can talk your way around it. Like when you're 40,
old man River, zip it or I'll break your hip.
When you're 40, you can kind of still talk your way around it. You know, yeah, I'm 40, but I'm a young 40. There's no young 50s. 50, I mean, you know. And as
50 is not the new 40.
No, it's not. It's kind of like now you're just staring down at 60. I mean that's just what you're looking at. I could just say from experience, you just know there's the comedian Louis C.K. There's no memorials for 50-year-olds. You know, like that's just you now. You're just what you are now. You're just a 50-year-old guy. So, well, good to have Chris Canty, obviously leading the show as we have a big show lined up for you today. We got Adam Schefter coming on at 7:45. It's a Monday, so of course we have Can He or Canty. My weekend was taking part in the annual Mark Sasso charity softball game that Don.
Oh, how was that?
It went very well. We had excellent weather. We could have used your bat in the lineup, but obviously you're down in the Carolinas, so not available this year. But it was good to see some people because, let's be honest, for me at least, I haven't seen anybody in so long. So it was good to see the Ryan Hurleys out there. Dan Grosso was out there. Wischusen was out there. Chris Carlin was out there. Peter was out there. So a lot of the people from the station were. It was good to see them and talk for a little while. And look, my goal going into that game is not about wins and losses. It's about not embarrassing myself and not coming up with some sort of injury.
Which you think, that order? In that order? Is that how you prioritize it?
No, it's reversed. Don't injure yourself. And then if you don't injure yourself, a good chance you're not going to embarrass yourself. But
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I had a base hit on the day, you know, so I had that taken care of. I had a nice out in the outfield. I took care of a routine fly ball. I caught it. Didn't take it off the face. Didn't take it off the chest. Made the out that was supposed, and that's not a given. In that game, with our skill set as it is, there are no routine fly balls. I know that much for sure. I've seen too many things go wrong. So I took care of that. Didn't embarrass myself, didn't injure myself. So
basically what you're saying is you're not the reason that the team lost or would have lost.
No.
It wouldn't be you.
Look, if we were playing by actual rules, we would have lost. We're not actually playing by rules, so we kind of somehow in a fugazi kind of way, we did win the game. But look, I contributed. That's all I can do.
Well, hold on. What rules did you speak of? What are you talking about here?
I mean, the team that we play is a legit. They have a softball tournament, and then the winner of that tournament plays us. Now, we are not winning anything, but they put rules in place that those guys can only hit 2 home runs an inning. Any more home runs than that, it's considered an out.
Oh, get out of here.
Yeah, no, look, I mean, we have to scale. You know, it's for charity. It's
I'm
for
an
fun.
Inveterate rules follower.
And look, it's pretty obvious. It's for Don doing this year in and year out. It's a bear to get people to show up. It's not easy to get to sometimes. Some people live on Long Island. Some people live far away. So if you were going there with the knowledge that you were just going to get your head handed to you by some professional softball players, you know, it would be even more difficult to get. I know I wouldn't be showing up in that case, as much as I love Don, if I was going there to get my head handed to me every single year. But no, it's a fun event, and we had some fun. And Don had a big grand slam late in the game. Ken Danico was the hero of the game by the game-winning home run, sending everybody home happy. So it was a fun time. It was a good and perfect weather. I mean, you couldn't have asked for a better day. So that was fun. All right, so it's DCR on a Monday. We're talking about how much fun we had on our weekend. And look, I understand Rick and Dave planned out their vacation way in advance because they have so much time. You got it. You know, the station will shut down if they take it all at once. But they picked a very good time, Chris, to have some vacation, because as the resident Met fans on this show, and probably two of the biggest Met fans on this station, their team had about as bad a weekend as you can be and still be a first-place team, right? Like, it starts Friday with the trade deadline. Mets are able to get Javi Baez, but strike out in terms of adding a pitcher, either a starting pitcher, which they desperately could use, or even some more arms in the bullpen. That did not go well. That on the same day that they happened to mention, oh yeah, by the way, Jacob deGrom, greatest pitcher on the planet, has had a setback, has now arm inflammation, so he's probably not going to be back until September. They wrap up their longest homestand of the season with a record of 5-6. Now, look, 5-6 in the National League East is not so bad because it's such a bad division, but still, that's not exactly what you're looking for. And then you get the news yesterday that the first-round pick that the Mets were doing cartwheels about, putting up billboards about this guy as soon as they drafted him. Oh, yeah, we didn't like what we saw with his elbow, and we are now not going to sign our first-round pick. Not a great weekend for the New York Mets.
No, it's not a great weekend for the New York Mets. I mean, I'm with you. I thought they should have tried to add an arm to that pitching staff right before the trade deadline. They didn't have to go that route. Javi Baez obviously was somebody that made a lot of sense for them because Francisco Lindor was out of the lineup. So he slides right there at second base. And then when Lindor comes back, you can move him over. Shortstop, excuse me. But when Lindor comes back, you can move him over to second base. But, I mean, this Mets team, because they're in the division that they're in, they're going to be fine. I just felt like this was an opportunity for them, if they would, to add a pitcher at the deadline. They could give themselves a little bit of a security blanket just because you never know what's going to happen. I mean, you've been relying on the likes of Tyler McGill and guys like that, and you're betting big on Cookie Carrasco to be huge for you when he gets back, and then Jacob deGrom coming back sooner rather than later. But you mentioned it, this latest setback. I mean, you have to wonder how long the Mets are going to be able to hold on to this razor-thin margin with the lead in the NL East. It's just one of those things that, you know, you have to be concerned about if you're a Mets fan.
Yeah, and look, I've been on that bandwagon that the Mets are going to be fine because the division is so bad. But it's almost like they're at the zoo exhibit and they're hanging the baby over the bars. The lion might not be able to get to them, but it's not from anything that they're doing. I mean, they are really kind of tempting fate here by leaving it out there this long. Like, if the Braves have now alternated wins and losses in their last 17 games. They have never been even at 500 this season. But with the way the Mets are playing, and for a good portion of time now, July and August, they are a 500 team after yesterday's game. They are not exactly putting the pedal to the metal in terms of putting this division away by any stretch.
No, I mean, they've lost six of their last 10. And guys that you've been relying on, guys that have been great all year, guys like Marcus Stroman, like Taijuan Walker, all of a sudden are starting to flounder a little bit. So you're concerned about that. And then the obvious, Gordon, is the offense. I mean, the offense has struggled all year long, but, I mean, it's just – it's getting to the point where it's ridiculous. I mean, yesterday they didn't have an at-bat with a runner in scoring position. The only runs that they scored was the Jeff McNeil home run. How do you do that? How does that even happen? I mean, that was the reality of what they dealt with yesterday. So, I mean, it's not great being in the position that they're in. You don't want to see them lose 2 or 3 to the Reds. It's one of those you feel like the team should be trying to move forward. You're trying to get guys in your lineup back healthy, and it feels like this lineup outside of Lindor being there is kind of intact. It's like, why aren't they manufacturing offense? Because we're at a point in the season where I feel like it's the offense's turn to kind of carry this team just because of the issues that the pitching staff is dealing with. But that hasn't been the case for them. So it's just like, okay, what's going to happen to this lead that the Mets have in the NL East? I don't feel confident that they're going to be able to hang on to it.
Yeah, and to say, look, and I brought this up on Twitter. I brought it up yesterday when I was hosting, and people pushed back on it. Well, you know, what deal did you want the Mets to make? Berrios, you had to pay an arm and a leg for. I don't want to give up my top prospects for a guy like Berrios, who might only be a 2 or a 3. In the week before the trade deadline, there were 40 trades that took place. More than 100 players changed teams. You can't be a team like the Mets, who has a clear path to a playoff spot in front of you and a clear need for a starting pitcher, and then when it's over and you haven't done anything to add to that rotation, you can't say, well, you know what, the prices were just too high for us. Everybody else was making deals. The Dodgers are making deals. Think about how good the Dodgers are sitting, and you think that they could very well, even though they're not leading the division, they could very easily return as World Series champs, and they're going out and making big-time moves. The Giants are making moves. The Padres are making moves. The Brewers are making moves. And here you have this clear need. Every team that's in contention is adding, and the Mets are not able to find an acceptable deal to add a starting pitcher outside of a 41-year-old Rich Hill and a guy they got from the Cubs and Trevor Williams, who they immediately sent to AAA. That's a miss on my books.
Yeah, that's a miss on my books too, especially because it's such a need for the team, right? And you want to make sure that you get your guys healthy, you get them right for whatever postseason run that you're going to try to make. And we all know that the strength of this Mets team is your pitching staff, especially your starting pitching rotation. Like, that's what you're going to live and die with. And it feels like all season long, they've been putting so much on these guys because the offense has struggled, because you've had so many guys out on the IL dealing with various things. Like, it just feels like they've put a lot on your pitching staff. And now you're starting to see that pitching staff wear down, break down. And you're just wondering, are they going to be able to hang on to this lead? Is the offense going to be able to do enough to kind of buoy the team until your pitching staff gets back right? That's the biggest question. You could have done a lot to fortify it at the trade deadline. You opted not to do that. You didn't see the value in that. So, I mean, you're rolling the dice a little bit as far as I'm concerned. And I don't know that that's a comfortable place for Mets fans to be.
And speaking about value, obviously you have the big news yesterday. Jeff Passan reported it even before it happened that it didn't look like the Mets were going to be able to work out a deal with their first-round pick, Kumar Rocker, the 10th pick in the draft. And at the time it was like, man, we can't believe this guy lasted to the 10th pick. What a steal. And now we now know why he lasted until the 10th pick, right? Like, we can't delude ourselves into thinking that the first 9 teams somehow just passed on this kid who was one of the stories in college baseball this year, and then all of a sudden the Mets got him and then realized that there was something about his elbow. They have concerns about his elbow and decide not to sign their first-round pick. And for having a new owner, and when Steve Cohen came on board, it was like, hey, the Wilpons are gone. It's a brand new day. We got an owner who's going to be able to fix all the things that we've had issues with in the past. Boy, that story, if I just told you the Mets made a pick in the first round, he was a 10th pick, and they found something that they didn't like and decided not to sign the guy, even though they're not going to be able to do anything else with that money, or they're not able to pick someone else with that pick at this point, you would have thought that Wilpons were still running the show.
Yeah, so there are a few things that I have an issue with here, Gordon. First of all, I don't understand how you can't get comfortable with the medical from a player before you decide you're going to make that decision to draft him. Like, that just doesn't make any sense. And I understand Scott Boras put the statement out there that after his college season was over with, they had the MRI, and they showed no structural change from now to back when he, you know, first had the MRI in 2018. So clearly this was something that there are other teams around baseball might not have felt comfortable enough to draft him because of what it looked like. But if you make the decision to move forward and take the kid, how could you not sign him and get it done? Like, I mean, even if the kid has got to have surgery at some point in the near future because there's something wrong structurally with his shoulder, I mean, you still have his rights. You still can develop him as a prospect. To draft him and then to not sign him, I mean, you're just throwing away a draft pick. You're throwing away an opportunity to infuse your team with talent down the road. I don't understand how that makes sense on the Mets front. Okay, that's one. Secondly, why are we still at the point where you can't trade draft selections in Major League Baseball? Why is that the problem? Why are we still doing that? Like, Buster Olney tweeted about this over the weekend, and I'm 100% in agreement with him. Like, if you draft a guy and for whatever reason you can't work out a situation where you can sign him, why couldn't you have the opportunity to trade away that player's rights? That part doesn't make any sense to me at all. I can't figure why they won't let guys do it, why they won't let teams do it. But for Kumar Rocker to have to start his professional career in the independent league as opposed to with the farm system of a major league club, to me, that's just ridiculous.
Yeah, and if the Mets, who did not apparently offer him a contract because of this elbow situation, didn't feel comfortable offering him a contract, well, shouldn't it be, then he's a free agent now, right? Like, I know baseball, the owners are not going to do that because they don't want to allow this to be an issue down the road, but it feels like it's the type of situation. All right, you drafted him, you can offer him a contract. If you're not going to offer him a contract, well, why should he be the one that's being forced to now sit and wait for another year? And as you said, go pitch in the independent league. He's decided not to go back to Vanderbilt, even though he had that ability to do that. Now he has to kind of sit on the sidelines and wait for the draft next year to be able to enter Major League Baseball. That definitely seems like a flaw in the system. But when it comes to the minor leagues and minor league players with Major League Baseball right now, it seems like there's a lot of situations where it doesn't seem like that's the right thing or that's the fair thing as well. All right, it's DCR on a Monday. 1-800-919-ESPN is the telephone number. Coming up, we'll hear from Jeff Passan, who had some thoughts about what's next now in this situation with the Mets and Kumar Rocker. We'll get your thoughts about where the Mets are at this point. Look, they're still a first-place team. The good news is they didn't change divisions, so you're still sitting in the National League East and still sitting in the driver's seat in that division. But with the way this weekend went, you cannot feel that great as a Met fan. And there's another thing that's out there. I don't know if Met fans are ready to hear it yet. I don't know if they've realized it yet. It has to do with Jacob DeGrom and what will happen after this season when it comes to their ace pitcher. So we'll get into that too. 1-800-919-ESPN is the telephone number. It is DCR on a Monday. It's Gordon in for Rick and Chris. Or excuse me, for Rick and Dave. Chris is still here.
So I'm right here, Gordon.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
You're absolutely right.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want. Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
He is Chris Canty. I'm Gordon Damer in for Dave and Rick. Did I forget my name there for a second? Just a split second? I might have.
I think that's what happened.
I might have. I mentioned Rick's name, and then all of a sudden I start making mistakes that I would never make ordinarily, like mispronouncing my last name. It's DCR.
Lani Sutaki.
Exactly. On a Monday, 98.7
FM. Well, he mispronounced his last name once upon a time, Gordon, so it's
yeah.
Okay.
It was so weird that it threw me.
DePietro and...
Yeah. He was waiting for me to say something. I'm like, is this a drop from the show early? Like, I didn't... It completely threw me. Yeah. But look, Yankees winning weekend. They finish off a sweep of the Marlins. And look, the Yankees did it in style in that they made sure they made all the games nice and dramatic, right? They don't score any runs early. They fall behind. They come back. Anthony Rizzo is just waiting for the announcement on when the number is going to be retired into Monument Park at this point. So that was fantastic. And then the Mets go out this weekend and just kind of kick it around, lose 2 or 3 to the Reds after the weekend they had. And then obviously the news with Kumar Rocker, their first-round pick, they're not signing him. The Mets general manager, Zach Scott, released a statement last night saying this is clearly not the outcome we hoped for and wish Kumar nothing but success moving forward. Steve Cohen, the Mets owner, tweeting out that baseball draft picks are worth up to 5% of their slot value to clubs. I never shy away from investments that can make me that type of return. And I don't know that he made the point that he thinks that he made there, Steve. First off, I can't imagine that baseball is too happy by Cohen putting out there that draft picks are worth 5 times their value. Oh, so what you're admitting is that you're dramatically underpaying guys who are, you know, getting drafted at that spot. They're 5 times more valuable than that.
Exactly.
And then, you know, for an organization that's worth billions of dollars, here you have a guy who, you know, $6 million you're talking about. That's not a lot of money considering the amount of money that the Mets put into payroll. You know, the fact that you, let's say he does need some sort of surgery, he needs Tommy John, he's out for a while. It's not like you have any other options, right? Like that draft pick, you get another pick next year, but you don't get to do anything with that pick. And your entire draft strategy was based around the fact that you knew you were going to have to pay him over slot money. So all the other picks you kind of made in the first like 10 rounds of the draft were either below slot or at slot. So it doesn't really seem like it was a good move for the Mets there, that they're not obviously going to be signing him. So not a great look for the New York Mets this weekend, for sure.
No, it's not a good look, and saying that way sounds a little bit like an understatement, just because, you know, you're absolutely right when you point out the fact that you can't do anything else with that draft pick.
Right.
Like, all of a sudden, that draft pick goes away. So, I mean, you're giving up on an opportunity to add talent to your system, and that's the part of it that just doesn't make sense. I mean, for somebody that is, you know, investment savvy and made a living in hedge funds and all of those different things, like, you have to understand, like, this is a way to add talent at controllable costs. And even if he has to have a surgery that's going to keep him out for the next year and a half, I mean, you're still talking about this being a long-term play and being somebody that can eventually contribute to your big league club, and you're just all of a sudden giving up on that. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And this is one of those things that Mets fans felt like, because we had new ownership, that we would avoid being in situations like this where we would be the laughing stock of baseball in terms of how we handled our draft picks. But no, this is typical Mets. Now, the one thing that you could say is, if you want to shift the focus to what's going on the field and them being at the top of the NL East standings, that's great. But my question to Mets fans would be, right after that, how long are you guys going to be able to hold on to that spot? Like, it's just been a bad weekend for the Mets. I mean, you're talking about them having consecutive series loss to National League teams. They're not moving in the right direction. And it feels like with this draft pick being the latest bit of bad news, they're starting to hustle backwards.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Like, let's just say that I know that Scott Boras put out the statement, as you mentioned, about that, you know, he's healthy and there's nothing. The orthopedic surgeons looked at his arm and all that type of stuff. But like in 3 years or like in 5 years, do you think Kumar Rocker will be a productive major league pitcher? Or do you think, I mean, because this has kind of happened at other times. There's been some other guys who have been thought to be high picks, weren't high picks because of some concerns about medical or contract or whatever, and then it never really worked out for them. Like, do you think in 3 years that Kumar Rocker, wherever he does wind up, he'll either be on the fast track to Major League Baseball or he'll be in Major League Baseball, like at the Major League level? Or do you think that this is the type of thing that, you know, might very well be the type of situation where he just never turns out to be what we kind of thought he was?
Gordon, knowing the Mets luck, I mean, in 5 years from now, Kumar Rocker will be a Cy Young candidate. Like, that's right. How things kind of work out for the Mets. But, I mean, listen, nobody can predict what this kid's future is going to be, but just conceptually, it just doesn't make sense to not take advantage of the opportunity to add talent when you have the chance to have the 10th overall top 10 pick. Like, that doesn't make sense at all. And so I get being uncomfortable with the medical, but, I mean, sometimes in order to have the big rewards, you got to take a big risk. I mean, there's a reason why he didn't go higher. You already pointed that out. So, I mean, if you're going to go ahead and make the selection, then follow through with it and sign the guy, and then you figure it all out after that. I just don't understand why you would say we're gonna draft him, but then we're going to try to bully him when it comes to trying to lock down a contract, and then if we don't get our terms, then we're not going to sign him at all. Like, it's just that part of it doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Let's go out to Jerry in Brooklyn. Jerry, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. I want to pick up on Kumar Raka, and you guys really touched on all the points. Before I get to Steve Cohen, you know, my first thought is that someone should develop a giant button on cell phones, don't send. Because I think that was terrible what he did. Education time, baseball draft picks are worth. You know, the bottom line is I watch all the drafts. I pull for all these kids to make it. They've worked so hard all their lives. I understand it's the Mets right not to do that. But I had a question to sign. I have a question. During the draft and just before the draft started, he was rated as a top three or four to go. When he slid to number 10 to the Mets, didn't that send up a red flag to someone? Because they were talking about decreased velocity and so on and so forth. Did they do their diligence in scouting him properly? I don't know, but I asked that question. And as far as Steve Cohen, you know, have some human decency. I love watching the drafts with the kids and their families and their grandparents and their friends, and they've worked so hard, and you do this to the kid. And I'll tell you something else I did not notice about the baseball draft. If the team decides not to sign a player, that kid should be able to go to any team. Absolutely. And work out any type. Agreed. Of deal he can.
Yep. Yep.
I mean, how many options does he have? That's not fair.
No, you're absolutely right, Jerry, and thanks for the phone call. Yeah, I mean, that seems to be the point that everybody has kind of been surprised about, that, like, if you don't get a contract offer, you know, it's like one thing if it's like a negotiation ploy or, you know, somebody's holding out for a bigger deal. And that's Rocker, the reason why he was sliding down, there were two things that kind of jumped out even at the draft. One was people were a little worried that he was going to want, you know, he's got Scott Boras as an agent, so you knew that he was going to.
Which is a legitimate concern. That's a legitimate concern.
Right.
I get that.
And then there were some concerns that middle of the year for Vanderbilt, there was a drop in velocity. Now, I went back and looked at his game log. Early on in the season, his average fastball velocity was 96. By the end of the middle of the season, it dropped down to like 90, 91. But then by the end of the season, it was back up 92, 93. So, I mean, you're talking about a difference of 3 miles an hour. But all that stuff was kind of known ahead of time. Now, they couldn't give him an MRI ahead of time, apparently. They can ask for information. It doesn't seem like Rocker's camp sent that information to the Mets. But when you're a fan of a team, you're kind of hoping that your organization knows more than everybody else. It's pretty clear here, you know, like when you talk about playing poker, you look around the table, you can't find the sucker. If you can't find the sucker, you're the sucker.
You are the sucker.
Yeah, it seems like the Mets here were the sucker.
No, it does. And, yeah, it should send up a red flag when the guy that's selected for Major League Baseball's pre-draft MRI program decides not to participate, and then all of these other teams in front of you decide to pass on him when it seems like the talent is so obvious. It should be like a huge red flag. But to that, I would say this, Gordon. I mean, sometimes in the draft process, you do have an opportunity to get tremendous value because teams get scared off by the medical. I mean, that's just what happens. That's the nature of it. I mean, if you're the Mets, though, and you believe in what you've seen from the kid at the collegiate level, I mean, listen, as long as it's something that you think can be fixed and that he can recover from eventually, if something does happen where he breaks down, then great, you know, then go ahead and make the decision to sign him. But if you're not comfortable with it, if there is this unknown that could potentially lead to this outcome where you don't sign a top 10 pick, then why draft him in the first place? That's the part that I can't get past. Don't draft him if you're not completely comfortable with the medical situation or the lack of information about his medical situation.
Yeah, it seems
you can't justify the decision. You can't justify the decision that the Mets organization made by drafting the kid and then not signing him. Lorenzo Carter, linebacker, Clemson. Yeah, that's pretty bad.
There's no way that you can look at it. And I know that people will be like, well, you know, obviously the Mets found out something. They're not going to pay money because there's obviously some major concern about his elbow. You can't go into a draft, have somebody come to you where you think, oh, my God, you know, they're running the envelope up there to make sure that they get him. They're putting up billboards about the guy. The first nine teams clearly knew this information. They passed on him for a reason. And then now you're not going to sign the guy. You're going to wait until next year. If he's out because of Tommy John surgery, okay, then he's going to miss 16 months. As it is, there's no draft tomorrow. So, yeah, it just seems like they've handled this about as poorly as they can. And part of that is Steve Cohen going on Twitter and saying, hey, look, you know, education time, you know, like talking down to people about where they're sitting here. Moving forward.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I don't wake up at 4 a.m. to wear a swim shirt.
Looking for more access to the show? Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at DCR on ESPN.
Oh, Yankees certainly got welcome to Miami yesterday. Yes, nice little sweep, something that's been an issue for the Yankees all season long. It was their 15th chance at sweeping a series. It's only the fifth time they've been able to do it. Now, look, they didn't exactly crush the ball all over the ballpark, but look, they got the job done. You're not going to send back any wins at this point of the Yankee season. And right now, Chris, if I were to ask you, the best team in New York, record-wise, at least right now, it's the New York Yankees, so that's a good thing. It's DCR on a Monday. It is 98.7 FM, ESPN New York. I am Gordon Damer, in for both Dave and Rick today. Chris is here. He's ready to roll. So we got a lot of stuff to do. We've been talking about the Mets, but let's get into the Yankees. They finish off the sweep of the Marlins yesterday. And, Chris, you have not really been on since they made the Rizzo deal, right? Because that comes on Friday. So I would ask you, how do you feel about the move? I think it's pretty obvious how every Yankee fan feels about the move at this point.
No, I mean, you have to feel great about the Yankees being able to make this move. I mean, offensively, it's been a little bit of a slog for us as well. But bringing in Gallo and bringing in Rizzo, it's the shot in the arm that we all felt like the Yankees needed ahead of the trade deadline. Like, this is... I can't even say it's exactly what you were hoping for, because I don't think in your wildest imaginations as a Yankees fan you expected that Rizzo was going to be as good as he was down in Miami. Now, look, I don't want to jump out of the window because it is the Marlins. You're talking about a team that's 15 games under 500. But at the same time, I mean, when you saw what Rizzo did, I mean, Friday and Saturday, Gordon, the guy didn't reach base but one plate appearance. But one. Just one. And then yesterday, it's a 1-for-4 night, but that one was a huge base hit to drive in the run to tie the ball game in the eighth inning going the other way. Like, I mean, just seeing what he did yesterday and seeing what he's done all weekend long, offensively, defensively, you saw it in the bottom of the eighth inning yesterday. He has that slick 3-6-3 double play. Like, those are the types of things that are a good sign for this team moving forward. Those are the types of things that help you build momentum. And that's what you're hoping for as a Yankees fan. I mean, being able to finish the drill and get the sweep this weekend. I mean, don't look now, but you're 2.5 games out of the second wild card, and there's only one team between you and that wild card as opposed to having three. So as a Yankees fan sitting here today, I'm not saying that I'm all in on this team, but all of a sudden I feel a lot better about our chances to be able to get to the postseason.
Let's hear from Aaron Boone on the immediate impact that Anthony Rizzo has made since the deal.
He's a keeper. What can you say? He's been terrific, obviously, a couple home runs, but really good at bats each and every time, and really good over there at first base, too. So, and he's come in here, and I think the heat of the chase has definitely invigorated him, and he's come in and fit in the room.
Yeah, so he's been fantastic. And you mentioned it, Chris. I mean, his defense at first base. You know, defense is one of those things when you don't have a defensive guy at a position, like when the Yankees were sending Miguel Andujar out of third base. Mm-hmm. You're thinking to yourself, all right, we know he's not great, but, you know, how much does defense really impact? And then when Gio Urshela got his chance, you're saying, wow, defense does make a big difference. And at first base, you know, I love Luke Voit, but Luke Voit is not going to be winning any gold gloves anytime soon. And you've seen, even in the three games, not just offensively, the impact that Rizzo's glove has made at first base, either with Gleyber Torres. There has been, I think it was yesterday, that Tyler Wade had a throw that he saved an error on. He has already made an immediate impact. And having that glove at first base with some of the, you know, questionable times that the Yankees' defense in the infield, that's going to have a major impact for this team moving forward as well.
No, it will. And, I mean, this team needed to get better defensively. I mean, we've talked about that. Like, those are the types of things that cost you opportunities to win games. And the Yankees don't have the luxury of being able to give away any games right now because we're in the hunt. Like, we're fighting for our playoff lives. But, I mean, having Rizzo, having Joey Gallo, like, that's going to make a big difference down the stretch. Getting DJ LeMahieu back in this lineup, that's going to happen soon. I mean, just being able to finally have some length to be able to be a juggernaut when it comes to wearing down opposing pitching. Like, that's how this Yankees team was constructed. Like, that's what Brian Cashman had in mind, the type of length that the Yankees are putting in this lineup right now. And so hopefully that ends up paying dividends and we end up being able to score runs like we expected this offense to be able to score runs coming into this season. And if you do that, then I think that we're going to end up in a pretty good place.
Yeah, and look, it's basically, you know what you're looking at. There's three teams for one spot. You know, like, I'm not getting crazy and thinking that the Red Sox are vulnerable now, that they're,
no,
you know, the Rays have overtaken them. That's too far away. It's the A's, it's the Blue Jays, and it's the Yankees, and it's one spot, that final wild card of the American League. And look, the Yankees' run differential is back to break even. They're back at zero, Chris. So that's always a good sign. And look, they didn't exactly pound the ball all over the field. The offense is not really complete right now because of the issues that the LeMahieu has had, Urshela has had. Stanton was out of the lineup yesterday, and he has really struggled at times this year. Voit seems like he's getting close to coming back, and who knows if Stanton can play the outfield on a regular basis or a semi-regular basis. There might be a way to get him some at-bats week in and week out. But in terms of what I thought the trade deadline was going to be, even with the addition of Joey Gallo, it was even better than that, and the immediate dividends of Anthony Rizzo, they have certainly paid off. And look at that. Having a little balance in the lineup doesn't hurt, Chris.
No, it doesn't hurt. You need to be able to have that, and being able to have guys that can attack, you know, left-handed pitchers. And you saw what Rizzo did. I don't know what the Marlins were doing bringing Bleier in, but I mean, you saw what Rizzo was able to do with that. I mean, that's what you need in this lineup. You finally have some balance. You've breaking up all of those right-handed bats, and again, it comes down to being able to wear down opposing pitchers. Like, that's what it is. You want a lineup that's relentless. You want guys that have that versatility, and it feels like Rizzo has what the Yankees have been missing. You know what I mean? A lot of swing and miss in that lineup. Being able to add more guys like Rizzo, being able to have a DJ LeMahieu, that gives you, being able to have Allen, like those give you guys that can kind of hit for average. They can put the ball in play. They can drive guys in. Those are the types of things that you got to have. And so I just feel like the Yankees offensively are much more balanced, which puts them in a better spot. The other thing that's a good sign is what you see from Zach Britton and Aloldis Chapman yesterday, being able to make sure that they can close the door on close games like that. Those are things that you need. Those are things that you have to have. So if those guys, the back end of that bullpen, you know, continues to trend the direction that it is and not be a gas can like it was, then I'll feel better about the Yankees' chances of being able to get that second wild card and make a playoff push.
Yeah, and look, we're focusing on the offense, and it's not like the offense went out there, as I said, and pounded a bunch of home runs. But you take a look at the pitching. Now, look, it's the Marlins, so, you know, they gave up four runs in three games. But now, last 20 of their last 21 games, their starters have allowed three or fewer runs. So there was a stretch there where the Yankees' starting rotation was kind of keeping the team afloat, and then it went down the other way, and Kluber got hurt, and it kind of all fell apart. And you're thinking, oh, man, how many different issues are the Yankees going to have? But now the starters have kind of picked it up, and as you mentioned, a couple of guys in the bullpen, even though Britton hasn't really been all that great, he's gotten the results that you're looking for.
Yes.
But Chapman seems to be over his kind of issues. So now if the offense does, as you expect, going to start to score some runs on a regular basis, the starting pitching looks a little bit better. The bullpen has started to figure some things out. Yeah, I mean, you know, again, we don't want to get too carried away because they still are 2.5 out of that final wild card spot, but it does seem like things are now kind of trending in the right direction for the first time in a while for the Yankees.
No, they do. The one question mark you have is with the rotation. I mean, you got Herman with the shoulder inflammation. We have to wait and see what ends up happening with that and him being on the IL, but also Gerrit Cole. Like, Gerrit Cole had an abysmal month of July. It's been really bad, and he's got to have to try to find a way to be able to figure it out. He's going to have to get over it. Hopefully it ends up being a blip, kind of like what happened with Aroldis Chapman, and he gets over it. But it's clear that sticky stuff, that crackdown, has started to affect him a little bit, and you just need to, for him to find a way to be effective and to be that guy that the Yankees can rely on every fifth day when he gets the ball. Gives you an outstanding chance to win. But right now, it just doesn't feel like that, and the Yankees have the record to show for it. Like, they have not been good. They have not been winning Garrett Cole starts. Something about that has to change as we move through the second half if the Yankees want to get to where they want to go.
Yeah, and Jordan Montgomery yesterday, another, you know, worked himself into a couple of jams, worked himself out of a couple of jams. You take a look at his ERA has dropped in every month. April, almost 4.5. May, it was 4. June, 3.77. And now, with July done, 2.93. So he's a guy that, you know, at times, I never felt like he was pitching as bad as the results were, but he has kind of found himself as well.
Yeah, Jordan Montgomery has been great. Yeah, I mean, he's been a guy that you can rely on. And I think that's what you want for a guy that's, you know, middle of the rotation, back into the rotation. Just somebody that can be reliable. Can you give me 5 innings of you know, 2-run ball or better? And that's what Jordan Montgomery is. I think the Yankees are comfortable with that. And, I mean, the results speak for themselves. So, I mean, if he can just continue to do what he's doing and just be reliable, then you feel good about it. But, I mean, ultimately, it's going to be – you know, the guy at the top of the rotation, Garrett Cole, him being that stalwart that you need, and then the bullpen being lights out. Like, that's what it has to be. That's the Yankees' formula for success. The bullpen be lights out. When Garrett Cole has the ball, him looking like an ace, one of the best pitchers in baseball. And in between that, you're talking about your lineup being able to bludgeon opposing pitchers. That's what the Yankees were built to do. That's what they have to get back to if they're going to actually make the playoffs.
Yeah, and Red Sox Rays last night, the Rays able to get that win, so now they overtake the Red Sox atop the division. I'm watching that game last night, Chris. Did you allow yourself to think as a Yankee fan which team you would rather face in a potential wild card game, or is that just too far down the road for you?
I mean, that's far down the road for me, but I will say this, since you put the question out there, I would go for door number 3. I don't want to face either one of those teams.
No, you're good. I mean, obviously, I don't want to have to deal with the Rays or the Red Sox.
No, because both of those teams have had the Yankees' number. I don't want to have to deal with either one of those teams until the last possible moment. Like that's nightmarish scenario if you're a Yankees fan. Like, you, I know a lot of people are like, oh, these are the teams that have tormented us the last couple of years. I'd love to have those guys as soon as we get to the postseason. No, you don't. You don't want to deal with them. You'd rather play somebody else. You don't want to play the Rays.
Yeah, but
you don't want to play the Red Sox.
I know, but that's the choice. I mean, if you're making the playoffs, you will either play the Red Sox or the Rays in that wild card game.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying, Gordon. I understand.
But you have
exactly
to pick one. This is not cop out. I don't know how Dave runs the show when he's here. This is not cop out time.
You want the question, you got to pick one or the other.
Pick your poison.
I'm not trying to cop out, Gordon. I'll say this. If I had to pick one, I would probably lean toward Boston.
Yeah.
You know, the pitching has struggled of late. We'll see what happens when they get Chris Sale back. But, I mean, their pitching has been really, really bad. So I would probably lean in that direction. Just because that Tampa Bay Rays team, man, I don't know.
Yeah, I wouldn't want
what's going on with their analytics department, but they use the numbers better than anybody else in baseball. Like, I don't know how they do it, but they do.
And the Yankees have been so close to beating the Red Sox in so many games that I feel like that, like the whatever the regular season record is going to be, it's going to be bad. There's just no way around it. Mm-hmm. I almost like the fact that it seems like that's the longer shot. So if you get hammered in the regular season, one game can eliminate all the losing that the Yankees have done against the Red Sox this year. So I feel like that might be
You, it's the Red Sox too.
Yeah. I think I would probably rather have the Red Sox. But look, we got a lot of work to do before we get there. But, I think that's probably the way that I would want to go.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. And to be able to do it in Fenway Park, too, that would be nice.
All right, 1-800-919-ESPN, 1-800-919-3776. So we've been discussing a lot of things. Let's go back to the phones because Lonnie is in Harlem, and he says that I big-timed him, Chris, at the softball game. So let's squeeze in Lonnie here as I big-time him before the break. Lonnie, go quickly, my friend.
Uncle Dama, how you doing, family? First of all, Uncle Dama, I wouldn't say you big time me, but I was trying to, you know, chop it up with you a little bit about the Yankees, you know, about you joining the 60 and over basketball league in your neighborhood, stuff like that. But I was just trying to get a good conversation with you. It seemed like you was in a rush to get back home to your CBD oils and stuff like that. So,
well, look, you know, if you don't, Lonnie, get the regular CBD inserted into the mouth at a proper time, especially on a Saturday. I mean, that's a Saturday night. Yeah, you know, look, I'm not going to lie to you. It was an in and out kind of. Yeah, look, the softball game was fun, and I did talk to Lonnie. I don't want to make it seem like, you know me, Chris, I'm not a big-time kind of guy. I mean, even filling in for Dave, who is clearly a big-time kind of guy, that's not my thing.
No, you don't try to big-time people.
Nobody.
That's not your M.O.
But I'm the talent.
No.
Yeah, filling in for Dave, maybe there's a possibility of that.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I have nothing left.
Hear more of DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.